This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 7:06 Friday, the 22nd of July. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. In the studio with me is Keith Kam and I'm Wong Xiao Ning. Now, in half an hour, we'll compare the chances of the two remaining candidates for the UK Prime Minister. But let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
Right, a look at the Bloomberg. The Dow Jones closed up 0.5%. The S&P 500 was up 1%. And the tech-heavy Nasdaq was up 1.4%. Earlier in the day, yesterday in Asia, the Nikkei ended up 0.4%. The Hang Seng finished 1.5% lower. The Shanghai Composite was down 1%. And Singapore's STI was down 0.6%. Back home, Bursa Malaysia's FBM KLCI was up 0.9%.
So rather mixed day in Asia, although it was a good day in the US. But for some analysis on what's moving markets, we speak to Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP. Good morning, Carlos. Like, I think we need to start with what the European Central Bank did. So they raised rates by 50 basis points on the back of the fear of inflation spreading while the euro is weakening. Were you surprised by the quantum of the rate hike?
Hi, good morning. So yes, finally, ECB is doing some tightening, I think.
After 11 years, right, Carlos?
Exactly. After 11 years and a lot of talk about inflation and about the Fed, we finally saw that rate hike yesterday. So to answer your question, not completely surprised that they decided to go there. Inflation is very high and the debate sort of in Europe seems to be focused around electricity prices, gas prices, transport prices. So from a political standpoint, it made sense that Lagarde decided to go for a larger 50 basis point rate hike. I think we were sort of the initial consensus was for 25, but there are a few factors that might have tilted the balance in favor of 50. And we do think that the same factors will apply when it comes to another 50 or even 75 basis point rate hike in September. And those are the fact that the European economy is now likely going to enter a recession during the winter months. So our probability of recession model shows a 40% chance now, probability of recession in Europe. And so the window for them to hike rates is very short. And moreover, the central bank pointed that they are probably targeting neutral real rates around 1 to 1.5. So that is suggestive of a short but steep rate hike cycle and then a pause after that once the European economy enters a recession. So I think that is what we are looking for the time being. But there are going to be a lot of questions around how they manage that, what the economic impact of that is going to be. And if their transmission policy mechanism that they also unveiled yesterday will be efficient in trying to contain some of the risk that we are seeing building up in the periphery.
There's been some unhappiness amongst mortgage borrowers as well as signs of debt distress from Chinese developers. Carlos, can you talk us through on whether or not there is a growing property market crisis in China?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the other big news, of course, is everything that's been happening with Chinese mortgage revolt, they're calling it, this mortgage revolt issue in China. In my opinion, it's the reflection or the culmination of many, many months of a slump in the housing sector. We are seeing negative double-digit growth in home sales and real estate investment. So a lot of developers are under a lot of pressure, and that has translated into project delays, some of them being unable to deliver pre-sold units. And there being a lot of pressure, and Chinese households as well, understanding this pressure and then deciding to interrupt their mortgage repayments until their units are delivered to them. I think it has the potential to be relevant, but I don't think that this has the potential to be systematic or a systemic risk in the Chinese economy. The reason for this is that although we are seeing spillover risks, I think it's approximately 300 projects that are now affected by this mortgage revolt. And that's about $2 billion in loans, but in relative to the size of the liabilities in the banking system, it's still 0.6%. So it's not a huge amount of overall loans. Banks that are impacted by the mortgage revolt have said that it's only a small proportion of their book, so the risk is manageable. And moreover, it's not that Chinese households are unable to pay. In fact, you know, if you look at debt statistics relating to Chinese households, they're still in relatively healthy positions compared to other parts of the world. It's more that Chinese households have chosen not to pay because they have concerns about the financial health of some of these developers. So we are going to see a lot of intervention from the government to try to address that issue and try to engineer an inflection point in terms of the slump in the housing sector. I think it's probably at a bottom right now. It cannot go much further down before we see that inflection point, but it of course could still take a few months. Mm. And once that inflection point takes place, Chinese households will feel that many of these developers are in a better position, then they might be more inclined to repay again.
Okay, let's talk about that Chinese household that we keep hearing about. Admittedly, you do say that they're in a better state than many other countries, but at the same time, there has been a threefold increase in the debt to GDP ratio since 2009. And for the first time, actually, savings rates in China are starting to pick up. What does this then mean for the broader economy, though?
Mm-hmm. So you're right. There's been an increase, but it's still 60 something percent of GDP, which is low by global standards. So there has been an increase. Moreover, a lot of household debt is tied to the real estate market. Typically, it's a preferred investment vehicle of many Chinese households. They estimate that between 60 or 70% of total household investment is related to real estate, versus, you know, in the U.S. where most of it would be the equity market. So I think it will have implications for the broader economy through consumption channels, because if there's a housing slump via wealth effects, it will make Chinese households less prone to consume. And that is going to be a factor that will weigh on that recovery that we had penciled in for the second half of the year. So we've tweaked our growth forecast slightly. We still expect that growth will remain below 4% this year, at 3.7%. But in terms of the composition of that growth, we are expecting more of a rebound in the fourth quarter, led by all of the infrastructure spending kicking in. And then that third quarter recovery being a lot more sluggish than previously expected, because it's going to be more difficult to engineer a recovery in consumption as a result of everything that's happened.
Well, let's look at commodities, Carlos, but still linked to China. The commodities markets, they are waiting to see if a super cycle will break out, but this also depends on China. Are markets likely to see any significant rise in Chinese demand for any specific metal commodities in the near term?
Right, that's an excellent question. So I just mentioned that the recovery in the second half will be more sluggish than expected. We have 4% and then 6.2% in the fourth quarter. So that suggests that this huge increase in demand from China that commodity exporters were looking for might A, not happen, or B, it will have to wait until the fourth quarter. So overall, what that suggests to me is that we are going to see fewer upside risks to commodity exporters, to commodity prices overall, but there are going to be, you know, some commodities that benefit more than others. In particular, we are seeing, of course, upsides on natural gas. That is entirely political and driven by the shortage in markets like the EU and North America. And it is possible that certain types of industrial metals might benefit from an increase in Chinese demand in the fourth quarter, especially iron ore. As you know, China has a big pricing power in that metal. So we might see some upside in the fourth quarter, but overall, this lower recovery trajectory suggests a more gradual, if not more sluggish, approach to commodities as well.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP. Well, he started the conversation about the ECB surprise hike of 50 basis points in their interest rates. But I think the point is that their in-house model suggests a 40% chance that Europe will go into recession in winter. So winter is coming literally for Europe. Not such good times for them. Something that hasn't had a good time is Snap shares. Now, they fell. It fell more than 25% in extended trading after reporting disappointing second quarter results and increasing competition from rival apps like TikTok hurting advertising demand, which is also not helped by the fact that Apple has got these new privacy rules, which doesn't allow them to have that certain level of conversion in their ads. So it's everyone's wondering whether this is going to be an indicator of how advertising revenue is going to come out of Meta and even Google. So this morning, actually, tech stocks didn't do so well, those names at least.
Well, it's reflected in their share price because Snap reported a loss of 2 cents per share. The revenue came in at $1.11 billion. The markets were expecting $1.14 billion, and this is only an increase, still an increase though, 13% on a year-on-year basis. It registered a net loss of $422 million versus $152 million a year ago.
And they most interestingly did not provide any guidance for the third quarter because forward-looking visibility remains increasingly challenging. And I think that's the reason why the share price after hours got slammed down by 25%. But a company that seems to have done pretty well is Mattel. Their quarterly sales and profit beat estimates as shoppers were unaffected by higher prices to snap up action figures and Hot Wheel cars, although the share price did slip around 3% in extended trading as the company reported that its adjusted margins contracted 70 basis points year on year to 46% due to higher supply chain costs.
Its net sales jumped 20% to $1.24 billion in the second quarter, higher than analyst estimates of $1.1 billion. But that's having said all that, though, it's nothing like physical toys.
Yeah, looks like there's a resurgence in it. But up next, we'll be looking at who could be the next Prime Minister of United Kingdom. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.